you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories, and thank you for joining us on our 10th anniversary. It's incredible to think that the Twilight Histories was started 10 years ago, way back in 2011. We've come a long way, and yet I feel strongly that the best years are yet to come. One of the projects we're working on is a tabletop role-playing game, so you can actually play the Twilight Histories with your friends. And that's what today's show is about. I was chatting with one of our listeners. Captain Nemo is what he goes by on our Discord channel. He said he was GMing a Twilight Histories game for his friends and wanted some help. Here's what he said. Could you write a show that tours someone through the Twilight Histories and that can be listened to before a person begins playing? I think people would be really interested in the infrastructure, security, mechanics, and what it takes to make it all work. Well, Captain Nemo, I fully agree. I have been thinking of doing a show like that for a while, a show that tours you around the Twilight Histories compound. And not only the compound, but also the area just outside the Twilight Histories, to give you a sense of the larger world in which it's set. In my mind, the Twilight Histories world would be a fascinating place to visit on its own, with its sky cities, interplanetary travel, metaverse, and sprawling shanty towns. You could do a whole podcast just in that world. It's also something I haven't shared much with you. It's all stuck in my brain, and I've only given you hints about it. We're going to change that today. I built out a character sheet using one of the professions from our core rulebook, which you can find on the website. This character will be gender neutral. You'll arrive in Roomchi as that character, tour around, get to know the world and its challenges, its technologies, and so on. You'll get to see some of the marketplaces where characters can buy things between campaigns, with whatever loot they plunder from different universes. Then, in part two of the series, you'll drive up to the Twilight Histories compound itself. You'll get to know where it is, how to get there, and what it looks like. You'll tour through the building and meet some of the characters you'll find in the game during a first session. You'll learn some of the physics and metaphysics of splitting worlds and get answers to questions you'd probably want to know if you were planning to risk your life passing through a wormhole to a different universe. So, enjoy this series, and happy gaming. This is Your Adventure Begins, Part 1, by myself, Jordan Harbour. You transfer funds to the taxi, and the door opens, filling the cab with coal dust and a flurry of snow. Your heart is racing. You don't want to leave the warm cab. You've never been outside your Sky City before, and here you are in one of the most wild and dangerous cities on Earth, famed for its street violence, rebels, bombings, and gang warfare. The city of Urumqi is so wild, even its small Sky City was destroyed in a terrorist attack, killing everyone inside and leaving the region totally lawless. You are a Sky City maintenance worker. You're part of the department that keeps the biosystems running, and your specific job is to maintain the carbon filters. It's an important job. It keeps the air in the Sky City pure. But it's also a job that doesn't leave much room for creativity. You deal with the science of chemicals. There are no windows in your subterranean home. The bowels of your Sky City are sterile, whitewashed, and clean, but they're also devoid of opportunities for imagination. Your only escape is to the virtual world, the metaverse. But even then, you're locked in the digital basement, firewalled against the really interesting worlds where the Sky Lords spend their time. You toyed with the idea of leaving your Sky City and joining the Colonial Network. but you've heard so many sad stories about the misery of the mining colonies. New recruits inevitably end up stuck on tiny, cramped asteroids, alone but for a robot or two. All the exotic worlds with alien life are taken by those with connections or seniority, and you have neither. You consider joining a tour to some moon or planet, but it's so expensive to jump space as a tourist, and the further out you go, the more expensive it gets. You can only afford a short trip to the Earth's moon on your tiny salary, but you'd mostly be stuck in subterranean chambers, which is exactly what you're trying to escape. Then, one day, as if by chance, you heard about the Twilight Histories. It popped up as an ad in your feed. At first, you were just going to swipe it away, but something about the imagery in the ad made you watch the whole thing. You saw an adventurer dressed in colorful medieval clothing put on a backpack and hike out into a beautiful valley. There was a glittering castle. The blue sky was filled with wooden flying machines. You went to the Twilight Histories page and started flipping through all their ads. There were so many worlds you could explore, and each one was so different from the last. There was one that was terrifying with seas of fire and great futuristic battles. There was a natural world filled with plants and animals that looked totally alien. You watched footage taken from the raw streets of Rome. You saw the Acropolis being built, and Chinese sailors being greeted by Aztecs. The scope and variety of these worlds was truly staggering. And so was the price. You couldn't believe the price. It was so cheap that you thought it might be a scam. For the same price as going on a weekend trip to the moon, you could explore 5 different worlds through the Twilight Histories. And for each of those worlds, you'd be gone up to 3 years. That's 15 years of travel, and all for the price of a weekend on the moon. Thank you for riding a Urumqi taxi, the taxi says. It starts to beep. Yes, it's time to get out. You hold your breath and lower your roller suitcase onto the dirt road. You hear a gunshot in the distance. It's followed by a scream and then a burst of automatic fire. Your heart stops. You run to a doorway to hide. You try to breathe deeply to calm yourself. You look around at the people in the street. They're all looking at you. They seem to be more curious about your reaction than they are about the gunfire. Nice suit, a young man says as he walks past. You look down. You're still wearing your white and blue Sky City Maintenance jumpsuit. It's the only thing you've ever worn, and it never occurred to you to change. But these people also look strange to you. You're used to seeing jumpsuits. Of course, in the virtual world, you see different things, but that's virtual. The people in Urumqi are dressed in heavy, dark coats with fur collars, and they have large fur hats or thick shawls. Some have cheap cybernetics, a red eye, a metallic hand. You notice one person's face glows orange, and he has markings that make him look like a tiger. It's quite startling. And they all look a little different from each other. You pull up an ethnicity scanner you installed on your chip. You activate it. Your vision is overlaid with tags attached to the faces of the people in the street. Now you see Afghans, Tajiks, Tartars, Mongols, Tibetans, Turkmen, Kyrgyz, Russians, many others. But most of the people you see are Uyghurs. You aren't sure what a Uyghur is, but you assume it must be some local indigenous group. You take a deep breath and approach an older Uyghur man. Excuse me, you say, the strange sounds forming in your mouth through your translator app. I'm looking for the Beautiful Fields Hotel. Do you know where that is? No, sorry, he says. He's about to walk away, but stops. He looks you up and down in bewilderment. Are you a dancer? He says. Aren't you cold in that outfit?
No, I'm not a dancer. I'm a maintenance worker. I'm trying to find a hotel. It's apparently in a market with a mosque.
Which market? There are mosques everywhere.
It's the sheep market, I think.
Ah, okay, he says. So, you're staying at the sheep market, eh? Where did you say you're from?
The Singapore Sky City.
Huh, you look like it. I'd change your clothes if I were you. You'll get the wrong kind of attention. Okay, it's a long walk from here. You have to turn down that street and keep walking until you reach the Sky City. Then, follow it around to the other side. Just keep following the wreckage and you'll come to it, God willing.
Sorry, you said the Sky City?
It's collapsed. Allah is great, he says, and starts to shuffle away. So, the famous Urumqi Sky City. You bring up a satellite image of Urumqi for the 1,000th time. It's a very grainy image, and the resolution is terrible. There's unfortunately a lot of cloud cover. It's useless. You file it away. There are no good maps of Urumqi. Apparently, the streets keep shifting as gang wars redefine the city. You pull up the app you just bought. It should draw a map as you move around. You've had it running since you left the plane, and so far, it looks like it's sketched one long curving line from the airport to here. You may get shot in Urumqi, but at least you won't get lost. You suddenly feel cold. You shiver. Hopefully, moving will warm you up. The old man was right. You do need a different set of clothes. Clearly, your maintenance worker jumpsuit is not practical for this type of environment. It's supposed to keep you warm down to minus 20, but it's minus 30 out. You're starting to feel it. You come to a street market. People are selling everything from clothing to jewelry and even guns. A heavy-set woman in a bright red shawl and thick coat approaches you. She looks startled. You need a coat? She says. Yes, actually. Come with me. She grabs you a bit rough by the arm and leads you to her stall where you see coats hanging on racks. She gets a measuring tape and measures you. She pulls out a black coat with a thick fur collar and holds it up to you. Try this, she says. You put it on and instantly feel its warmth. I love it, you say. How much?
500 rubles, she says.
You open a conversion app. This is expensive. It's more than you'd pay for a coat like this back home. But you've never bartered before, and you don't want to offend her.
Do you have a hat? You say. And boots?
Yes, yes, she says. So, 500 rubles is good for the coat?
She pulls out a handheld digital wallet. You picked one up before you left on this trip. The Twilight History's Travel to Urumqi page recommended it. You type out 500 rubles, then tap your wallet against hers. The payment transfers, and she grins. Well, you must have gotten ripped off, but at least it's a nice coat. One of the locals even gives you an approving look.
Now, the hat and boots? And how about a backpack?
You say, feeling self-conscious about your roller suitcase. No one starts an adventure with a roller suitcase. Once you're decked out in your new gear, the woman takes you to a mirror so you can admire yourself. What a change. You aren't sure if you'll pass as a local, but you certainly won't feel like you stick out anymore. You almost feel like you're on a Twilight History's adventure already. And come to think of it, you are. This is the first leg of your journey. Just to warm up your adventuring skills, you make a decision that you will say yes to everything. Within reason, of course. Whatever comes your way, if it's not too dangerous or too expensive, you'll give it a try. You'll be a little brave. You thank the lady and continue through the street market. Your stomach rumbles. It's time to eat. You follow your nose to an open area where people are selling street food. You almost walk right into a skull with melting brown flesh. You let out a little yelp in surprise. The woman at the stall laughs.
She's stirring a great cauldron of soup, and around her stall are severed heads that look well cooked. "Want some sheep soup?" she says. Do you put the heads in it? The soup is sheep offal and cheek, very delicious, and will keep you strong and warm on a cold day. What's offal, like the guts? Yes, intestine, stomach, liver, and there's also cheek. It's very tender. You want a bowl? You look around and see men and women sitting at long benches slurping soup. There are other stalls. You see one selling rice and meat that looks quite good, if not a little greasy. But then you remember you did just challenge yourself to be more brave. Take the tough route. You'll have to get accustomed to being more adventurous if you're going to split worlds tomorrow. Sure, I'll take a bowl, you say. You tap wallets. She takes a sheep's head off a pike and slams it down on a well-worn chopping block. Using a butcher's cleaver, she carves off some cheek and tosses it into a bowl, which she fills with soup with her ladle. The offal plops into the liquid in chunks. It smells strange, almost septic, like the grime you wipe off your carbon filters at the end of the day. You take your bowl over to a long table under a string of bare light bulbs and sit next to a man slurping loudly, his bowl at his wet lips. You wonder if the bowls are cleaned between customers. You haven't seen anyone doing dishes in the market. Well, no matter. You've had your inoculations. You try the soup. It has a very strong flavor. You find it difficult to relax and enjoy it. But the lady was right. It does warm you up. You see the Sky City. It's lying across the street in a massive pile of rusting metal that towers above the tallest buildings, even though it's lying on its side. So this is the famous Urumqi Sky City, the first city that collapsed. There are many sky cities that have collapsed in China. The whole region is in civil war. The interior, wary of being excluded from the wealth of the coast, rebelled, and the war has caused great suffering. Sky cities are very hard to attack, but the rebels are a determined enemy. The sky city of Urumqi was at the far periphery of the Chinese Empire, so it was isolated. You remember that day well. You were only a child when it happened, but you remember all the adults in the children's creche wore black armbands and looked sad. You've often thought about it since. You've imagined what it must have been like to be on one of the top floors as the whole mile-high tower fell like some huge glistening tree. You always hoped the Sky Lords would have been plugged into the virtual world and wouldn't have been aware of their deaths. But who knows? What a nightmare. How terrifying. And here it is, massive and dead and rusting, like some huge ship at the bottom of the ocean. And here around it are the scavengers, picking the corpse clean like crabs or eels, the bottom feeders of the world. You shudder and try to snap yourself out of it. They're not really bottom feeders. They're just regular people, poor people. They live in shanty towns. There are millions of them. It was never really fair that the Sky City dwellers had everything and these people had nothing. Not really fair at all. You know from your own Sky City in Singapore that the people outside are left to fend for themselves. They're not even policed. The Sky Lords don't care about them. Your co-workers make fun of people outside the Sky City perimeter. They call them all sorts of names, like scrappers because of their cheap cybernetics. They call the vast sprawling shantytown the junkyard, the sewer, or the rust pile. You feel ashamed to admit you would also call them these things. Well, now you see a sky city that's quite literally a rust pile. Although it's terrifying to consider, perhaps there's some justice in that. You come to the sheep market. You could smell it before you saw it. There are sheep everywhere, bleating and crying. They have paint on their backs as identifiers, and they look scared. trucks drop them off or cart them away, and the men and women who handle them do so roughly. It seems to you they're more rough than they need to be. You remember the woman carving the sheep skull for you to eat, and you feel sick. You hear the call to prayer from the mosque at the end of the open market. It's a beautiful sound. It's eerie. You aren't sure if it's frightening or relaxing. You've never heard anything like it at your Sky City. The singer seems to be out of tune on purpose. Either that or he's using a completely different musical system. Regardless, it feels out of world to you. To go from the clean, sterile, subterranean world of a Sky City to stand in the middle of an open-air sheep market while listening to the call to prayer, this is about as strange a contrast as you can get. You feel your head swimming. It's almost like a dream. It doesn't feel real. You never thought this type of thing could exist in your own world. With the great hulk of the rusting Sky City framing the background, the scene could almost be from a dystopian science fiction, Arabian Nights, in some northern climate. A gun goes off. They're screaming. People and animals start to crush towards you. You move with them. A man with a long beard is shot in the head next to you. A fragment of his skull hits your arm. You scream and try to run. A sheep rams your back, and you fall to the ground. You try to crawl, but people are stepping on you. Finally, there's space for you to rise. You've lost your backpack. You don't care. You run. You see men on the outskirts of the open market, shooting people and laughing. You see return fire from the other side of the market. You drop to the ground again and pull yourself into the fetal position. The gunfire ends and you hear vehicles driving away. You hear the crying of the wounded and the bleating of sheep, men cursing. A man with a beard and a rifle stands over you. He offers you a hand up. "Are you okay?" he says.
I think so," you say. "What was that?"
"Horse thieves. They've been trying to take over this part of Urumqi for months."
"Oh, what are the horse thieves?"
"A gang. You're not from around here, eh?"
"No, I'm staying at the Beautiful Fields Hotel. Do you know where that is?"
"Sure, it's just over there," he says, and points to a towering shanty next to the mosque. He moves on, helping the wounded. You look around for your bag. You find it next to a body. You walk over to it, your knees shaking. The adrenaline is starting to wear off, and you're feeling tired and weak. You step over the body. Your ethnicity app says he's Afghan. He's been shot right through the heart, and there's a great pool of blood mixing with the mud and the snow and the dark coal dust. You've never seen a dead person before. You kneel down and look at his eyes. They're milky with death. By the wisps of his mustache, he must be a teenager, maybe 18 or 19. He's still holding his rifle. You shudder and continue on to your hotel. You check into the hotel and climb the rickety stairs to the fifth floor. It's a horrible room and smells of sweat and animal and liquor. The plaster on the walls is peeling and the floorboards are rotten. The twin bed is still messy from the last guest. There's a balcony. You decide not to step out as the wood is clearly melting away, but you can at least take in the view. You look out on a vast city. A huddled mass of shanty towns filled with honking, bleating, canned music, calls to prayer, hawking, fighting, and lovemaking. Urumqi is a sprawling, organic being, a mass of life, the kind of life your carbon filters would have removed. But here it is, unfiltered and unapologetic. Humanity beyond the fringes of civilization, or at least civilization as you've understood it. That understanding has expanded today, and tomorrow it will expand into a different universe.
It's morning. You go down to the sheep market. The Twilight History's information page advised you to try to hire a truck from the market to take you out to the Tian Shan Mountains, where their facility is located. Failing this, you'll have to hire a taxi, but not all taxis go that far out of town. And since it's a 3-hour drive, it would be very expensive. A part of you just wants to spend the money and get the taxi. A large part. But you did promise yourself to be more adventurous. Besides, you're running low on money. You ask around and are surprised by how helpful the people are here. They look tough, but their faces quickly melt into smiles when you greet them. One of the men brings you around the shepherds in the market until you find one who's leaving within a couple hours. The 25 rubles he's asking seems like a deal. Since you have a couple hours to kill, you go for a little wander, careful to make sure your mapping app is on so you can find your way back. You wind your way through narrow streets until you come to a walled area capped with barbed wire. A Chinese guard in black riot gear and cybernetic arms and legs approaches you. She has a very modern assault rifle and a very nasty-looking hunting rifle at her side.
"What do you want?"
she says with a metallic voice. I was just wondering what this building was.
"Move along,"
she says, and gives you a firm shove in the chest. A man selling buns across the street waves you over.
"Did you see that?"
you say to him. "Oh, don't mind her. Those guards are good customers."
"What is that place?"
"It's the Chinese compound. You're not from here?"
"No. Why are the Chinese in a compound?"
"Their Sky City was destroyed. This is all they have now."
"Oh, well, you don't say. I assume the Sky City dwellers all died in the collapse."
"Not all of them were in the Sky City when it fell. And some crawled out alive."
"But wait, you said they're all Chinese?"
"Yes, the Sky City in Urumqi was only for Han Chinese. No minorities allowed. Now, they're all cowering in there. The guards are good customers, so I set my shop up here. Do you want some buns?"
"No, thank you. Actually, I may buy a few. I'll take 5. I'm heading out to the mountains. Ever heard of the Twilight Histories?"
"No."
"Is there anything else around here worth seeing?" He thinks for a moment.
I like the Lenin Gardens. You can take it easy and play some chess."
"Sounds nice. How do I get there?"
He draws a map on a scrap of paper and gives it to you along with the buns.
"Thanks," you say.
You weave your way through the alleys, trying to follow the map, but you quickly lose your way and decide to just wander around. You find yourself on a street filled with cybernetic body parts hanging from ropes. You hear the buzzing of saws. You hear hammers tinking, Turkish music, and you see flashes from arc welders behind tarps and dark doorways. This appears to be a cybernetic street market. Pass an open door where you see a naked man lying on a table, an oxygen mask over his mouth, a heater blasting from above. There are bags of blood hanging from rods. A heavily modded Uyghur with a cigarette dangling from his mouth fires up a buzzsaw. He turns his music up, then positions the saw over the sleeping man's shoulder. You quickly continue on your way, not wanting to see the grisly procedure. You see a kid about 4 years old playing on the ground with a cybernetic hand that's crawling away from her like a spider. She seems to take great delight in the toy. You find a shop with body parts made of skin instead of metal hanging from wires. Hands, legs, feet, arms. There's even a bucket of fingers and toes and eyeballs. A preternaturally handsome man with broad shoulders smiles at you with glistening white teeth.
"You look like a clean-cut kid," he says in a rich voice. "How about a synthetic mod?"
I'm not really sure I feel like replacing a body part today. Thank you, you say.
You get most of the strength and much more agility from a synthetic mod than from a scrappy cybernetic. But no one will ever be able to tell. It's your secret.
No kidding, you say. You touch one of the arms dangling from a wire.
Feels real, doesn't it? He says.
It does. How much feeling do you get from them? Can you feel pain?
Pain and pleasure, but it's programmed how you want it. There's a pain cap, and unless you really want it, it won't go higher.
What do you mean by a pain cap?
Well, we need to feel pain to warn us against danger. You don't want to put your hand in a fire and not pull back. Pain helps you avoid doing something stupid. But the amount of pain we feel with our organic bodies is excessive. Nature is cruel. If you're shot in the arm, you don't need a searing pain to tell you something's wrong. That's just cruel. So, synthetic mods are pre-programmed with a pain cap, which means you will never experience more pain than a stubbed toe, no matter how bad your wound.
Interesting. But wouldn't the body part feel foreign? Like it wasn't really you?
It's something you get used to, like a new set of clothes. Most of my customers are extremely happy with their mods, especially when they feel their new strength and agility. Most of my customers return for more.
I see some of these look more real than others.
Different price points. The one you're touching now is very high grade. It's something a Sky Lord would wear. But that's the only one of that type we have. In fact, it's the only one in all of Urumqi. I have to special order them from my supplier in Almaty.
Do you have any synthetic mods?
Haha, oh yes. I've replaced my entire body, including all my organs. I only use the Almaty synths. Top of the line, Sky Lord graded mods.
He flashes you a smile. You wonder what he looked like before the mods.
Probably short and ugly.
Or maybe that's just you being envious.
Here, watch this,
he says, and steps outside his stall. He removes his coat and pulls off his shirt, revealing a chest and torso of a champion bodybuilder.
It's minus 30 out, but no problem. It feels like a spring day to me, and my body isn't affected by it.
He steps over to a bucket with a layer of ice on top. He forms his hand into a fist and punches through to the frigid waters beneath, dunking his arm to the elbow.
No problem, he says.
He pulls out a shard of ice and stabs it at his chest. The ice shatters without leaving a mark.
No problem, he says. I could climb a mountain naked. I could walk through a burning building.
What if someone shot you?
My skin and organs would repair themselves. You'd have to fire a rocket at me to do any real damage. Even then, I might be able to survive. I can run as fast as a lion. I can leap like a leopard. I can swim.
Like a fish? You say, finishing his sentence. He glares at you, then flashes his glittering smile.
Like a dolphin? I have the body of a Sky Lord. Even the greatest of them isn't better than me.
How much does a body like that cost?
More than anyone in a room she could afford, he says, and puffs up his chest.
Well, thank you for the demonstration, you say.
You round the corner, and now you're in a street market filled with body film. There are people with all sorts of interesting faces shopping the stalls. Their faces glow different colors and have wild patterns. You've heard they change with mood. You find a stall that has a board filled with images of customers with different art filmed on their bodies. There's a woman with a unicorn on her back that glows bright pink. There's a man with a huge metallic tank on his chest, its muzzle flaring red. There are other images of weapons, animals, music groups, and religious icons. The more interesting ones are on the second board that show full body films, like the kind you've seen in videos about prisons.
You like any of them? A man says.
Yap tags him as a Russian. His face is blue and his body looks large under his heavy coat.
Yeah, I've only ever heard of body filming. How does it work?
I'll show you,
he says and waves you through the plastic blinds, yellowed by age and cigarette smoke. You remember your pledge to yourself. Be brave. Say yes, provided it's not too dangerous. You follow the man in. You feel a blast of heat from a fan over the plastic blinds, and you take off your hat. The place smells of cigarettes, plastic, and burnt flesh. There are a few beds in the dingy room. One of them has a customer lying on his stomach. His shirt is off, and a man with a cybernetic arm is spreading a wet film over his back.
The film is a mix of digital-programmed organic plastic, the blue-faced Russian says. It's a polymer that's pre-programmed with different shapes and colors that interact with your body temperature and blood flow. We can set the normal state to whatever you like. Then we set the type of emotion it reacts to.
Like what, you say?
Well, for instance, we get some young men and women who want a heart or an angel somewhere on their body that turns red when they're spending time with their lover. We also get mercenaries or soldiers who want a film that turns color when their adrenaline is up. It makes them more intimidating, you see. We can even layer the film so you have one permanent image that's replaced by a different image under different circumstances.
I don't follow.
Well, let's say you want certain images on your face that are violent. But when you're with your lover, you don't want them to see those images. We can layer a different film over your face that reacts to your body temperature when you're stimulated by this person. So it takes over. It might be a film that enhances your blush or your lips. Or we could animate roses opening on your face, that kind of thing.
You can animate them?
Certainly. You want a fire burning on your chest? Or how about an eagle clawing at a fish? Anything is possible.
How do you program it? The blue-faced man takes you over to a shirtless worker, covered in glowing green body film that's animated in a swirling pattern. His face is in a visor, and he's looking down at a small sheet of film spread over a bed of light. He's drawing a skull onto it. Your ethnicity app is having difficulties tagging the man.
Vlad is our artist. He pens the art, then colors and animates it. He sets the vibrancy and the conditions for your body to react to it. It's a bit of art and a bit of computer programming.
Vlad swivels around on his chair.
Of what colors do you like?
Now your app tags him as a Russian, though it would be difficult to tell if it wasn't for his name and accent. His face has been heavily filmed with swirling patterns of vivid glowing colors.
I don't know. Anything but blue and white, I guess, you say, imagining how ridiculous you'd look if your film matched your jumpsuit.
Any patterns you like? Drawings, animals?
Oh, I'm not sure. I saw a guy yesterday whose face looked like a tiger. Did you guys do him?
Oh, yeah, maybe. That's gang film. They come in here sometimes. Body film is very popular with gangs. You should see the film of the Skull Assassins. Great artwork. Terrifying. Their faces look normal, except when they go into a rage. Then their faces turn into burning skulls. It's pretty incredible work.
How do you put the film on? Does it hurt? The man with the blue face leads you to the bed where the customer is having his film applied. The film covers his back, and the worker is waving a blowtorch over it. It crackles, and you smell burning flesh.
We burn it into your skin, but don't worry, it doesn't hurt. We freeze the area so you don't feel a thing. We can even knock you out if you like.
He snaps his fingers in front of the customer's face.
See? Doesn't feel a thing.
Is that safe? Burning plastic into skin?
It's safe enough. Some people get an infection, but we got pills you can take.
What happens when the freezing wears off?
Well, it will hurt a bit. You might want to take a few days off to rest. Take painkillers. I could get you some pure Afghan opium. You'd have a great time. And what's a few days of pain for a lifetime of great art? It will define you.
Well, it sounds really interesting, but I don't think it's for me. Thank you for showing me around. It's fascinating. You leave the body film shop and stroll through the tight markets until they turn into a weapons market. There are weapons everywhere and of every kind imaginable. You almost bump into a knife hut in the middle of the lane. There are mean-looking blades, and there's a meaner-looking merchant behind the stall. He holds up a serrated knife, about a foot long. It begins to vibrate and glow red-hot. He brings out a watermelon with a shock troop helmet strapped to it. He stabs the blade through the helmet, and it purrs right through. The watermelon starts to shake and convulse. Then it explodes.
Thank you,
you say, and back away. You approach a gun stall.
You're looking for something big or small?
The gun merchant says. She's an elderly woman with an eye patch, a Mongol, and she wears a large fur hat.
Do you like lasers, pulse guns, or old-fashioned chemical bullets?
What's the difference?
Lasers are accurate and quiet. They leave a small hole and require charging. Good for quiet work, but not so great in a firefight.
She takes a small handgun out of the plexiglass case. The barrel is a simple tube.
This can burn through bone, but not through armor.
She pulls a battery pack out of the bottom and puts it back in.
You get 50 shots before you need to charge it. So it's not bad if you're looking for a weapon that you can shoot fast and often. But if your opponent has a flak vest, you're doomed.
She pulls a long rifle from the wall. It looks like a larger version of the handgun, with a very streamlined, simple round barrel, but with a high-powered scope and a hefty butt.
This will shoot through armor and is accurate for 5 miles. You don't have to worry about weather or gravity. It's very accurate, quiet, and the battery is good for 10 shots. It's a very high-powered laser and very popular with assassins who need things done quietly and accurately from a distance.
What about a pulse gun, you say? She winks and pulls out a meaty handgun.
Pulse guns are electromagnetic. You have 2 rails, one on either side of the barrel, and the magnets are charged. Again, like the lasers, by a battery pack in the handle.
It fires a solid projectile, she says, and puts a large metal bullet on the counter. It's fat and long and has fins like a small missile.
A good pulse gun can fire the bullet at hypersonic speeds. If you put it on its highest setting, it can blast through solid concrete. It will go off like a bomb. But if you want to do that, the bullets need to be large so it doesn't burn up before it arrives at its target. You have to load each bullet individually because the handle is used for the battery pack. But the bullets would be too large to fit in the handle anyways. When you use a pulse handgun, at the highest setting, you want to hit the target in your first shot. Otherwise, you're left exposed. If you do hit them, they're not getting back up, and neither is the house behind them. What some people do is fire off a pulse handgun with one of these missile bullets for shock and awe, then strap a clip on top of micro bullets, lower the intensity, and pepper the enemy.
Don't they get really big?
Oh, yes. That's where the real power comes in. The longer the magnetic rails and the more power you send them, the bigger the boom. And when I say boom, I mean it.
Come, she says, and motions you through a small door at the back of her stall. You follow her. There on the wall, you see a multi-barreled Gatling gun.
There's 1,000 projectiles loaded in the ammunition drum that you carry on your back, along with the battery. The bullets are pulled by the gun motor into the feed chute, where they're picked up by one of the 6 barrels that spin past the magnetic rails. The bullets are fired at hypersonic speeds. 1 burst could fill an office tower. You could clear a whole city block in 1 pass. You want more firepower? Try depleted uranium-tipped projectiles.
How many seconds can you fire this thing before it's out?
10 seconds,
Then you either throw it away or you get a new ammunition drum.
Wait, you said there's 1,000 rounds in that drum. And you only get 10 seconds?
That's right. 100 rounds per second.
Try lifting the drum.
You lean over and take the shoulder straps. You try to pull it up, but it's too heavy for you. You can't even budge it an inch.
The old woman cackles. You need some heavy cybernetics to carry this around, let alone shoot it. It's not for you.
She leads you out of the hut.
So, what do you think? How about a handgun?
You remember the body you saw bleeding out in the sheep market yesterday. You think it might not be a bad idea to have a weapon.
Sure, how about something small I can conceal? I mean, really small.
She takes the pulse handgun off the counter.
Laser or conventional?
You didn't show me the conventional. What's that?
It's old tech. It's been around for hundreds of years. But there's a reason for it.
She brings out a small handgun that looks like a museum piece. She hands you a bullet.
See the bottom part of the bullet? That's filled with chemicals. When the hammer and the gun hits it, the chemicals ignite and create a small explosion. What comes out of the barrel is that small bit at the end.
Seems inefficient.
It is, but there's a reason people still buy them.
Why?
Durability. They're tough as nails, and they don't need to be charged. You can take one of these things anywhere, in mud and rain, you can leave it in a mine shaft for a decade, pick it up, and it still kills someone. So, which one do you like?
Well, I like the laser. It's small and quiet, and I wouldn't have to carry around any bullets. But I'm going to a place where I can't charge it.
Does this place have sun?
Yeah, sure. She puts a fist-sized pouch on the counter. She unfolds the pouch, and you see it's actually a small solar panel.
You plug this wire into the battery pack, and your gun will charge in one day.
That's perfect. She puts out three laser handguns, and you pick the smallest. The barrel is no larger than your thumb. You want something you can easily conceal and afford.
700 rubles, she says.
You cringe. You're really scraping to pay for this.
How about 500, you say. 680. Any less and I'd have to take away the solar pouch.
Fine, you say. You wander further along the winding streets. You pass an electronics market that sells jailbroken chips. You pass through a body armor market. You see jewelers and goldsmiths. A merchant with a long mustache and turban, who your app says is Iranian, shouts that he'll pay good money for your treasure. Unfortunately, you have none to sell. But this is a good thing to remember. Maybe you'll find something shiny on your journey with the Twilight Histories.
Your alarm flashes. You have to get back to the sheep market and catch your ride.
Your stomach starts to churn. Next stop, the Twilight Histories. Maybe in a few short hours you'll get to see that valley with its castle and flying machines. You hope so. Then a flash of fear hits you. What if it's all just a scam? What if the Twilight Histories isn't real? How foolish you'd feel coming all this way out here for nothing. They cleared out your savings. You'll return to your Sky City a fool. All your friends warned you about this scam. You shake it off. No. Even if the Twilight Histories is a scam, these past 2 days have been the biggest adventure of your life. You've never stepped outside your Sky City before, even into your native Singapore. Now look where you are. The wildest, craziest city on Earth. Urumqi. And somehow, you're surviving. You're not dead. You're meeting people, eating local food, and exploring what has turned out to be more fascinating than anything you experienced in the virtual world. Unfortunately, you can't see the Lennon Gardens with their chess players on this trip. Perhaps on your way back you'll find them, and maybe you'll discover other sights in this strange and exotic and dangerous city of Urumqi in the year 2417. that was part one of Your Adventure Begins. In part two, you will leave Urumqi and travel to the Tian Shan Mountains, where you'll find the Twilight Histories. You'll get to explore the compound, learn about its history, the machinery and the physics involved, as well as the procedures clients undergo before splitting worlds. While I hope this first show was interesting in giving you a sense of the Twilight Histories world, and specifically Urumqi, which will be your home base as a role player, it's not something you need to visit in your first game. If you're a GM, between games you could bring your group to Urumqi and have them buy things in the markets with their loot. You could even lead a little adventure there, if you want. It's a huge, sprawling place where your imagination can run wild in the narrow alleys, neon mosques, and, of course, we never even went into the labyrinthine wreckage of the Sky City. If you're a GM, I'm sure your mind is swirling with ideas. And what a great way to deepen the experience for the players by giving them a sense of grounding in this world. If you want to know more about the RPG, head on over to the website where you can find the rulebook and character sheets. We also have a Discord channel where I'd encourage GMs and players to meet, and of course you can talk with me about the game. As this game is a new project, I'm open to your feedback so we can improve it. One day we'll build it out, maybe with a Kickstarter, so we can hire artists to do a professional job. But for now, we need GMs and players to run through some games and help improve the mechanics. If that sounds like you, I want to hear from you. Go to the website at twilighthistories.com and click through to our RPG page, where you can find links to everything you need to get started. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.